Hello, everybody, and thank you very much for tuning into the Vet Tech Cafe today. We hope you're doing great. We're going to be doing things a little bit differently here to start out, where I'm going to be interviewing Dave for an episode, and he's going to be interviewing me, so that you can kind of see what kind of format we're going to be doing with this podcast. So for today, I'm going to interview Dave, and we're going to talk about his career path and some of the jobs that he's had, some of the things that he's done on the side, where he's at now, maybe where he sees his career going, goals that he might have. And all the while, we're trying to bring to you, the listener, different things that you can do inside of veterinary medicine, because we know that a lot of people get to a point in their career where they start to feel trapped, if you will, where maybe they're in a clinic setting and they've been there for a while and they just don't know what else to do. And that's really one of the big things that we want to get out of this, along with discussing a lot of the important topics of the day and some of the issues that we face as veterinary technicians. I would say the other major point that we want to do is different career paths that we can take as our careers evolve. And, you know, it's all about trying to find longevity in this field, which is elusive at best. So we'll get started. Like I said, I'm going to interview Dave in this episode. He's going to interview me in a separate episode, just so you can kind of get an idea. We can get our feet wet with interviewing. We can get our feet wet with some of the back end work and editing and so on and so forth. So we hope you'll indulge us and listen to these first couple of episodes where we interview each other and talk about what we want out of this podcast and where we go from here. So without too much further ado, I'd like to introduce Dave. Dave, thank you so much for being here today. Let's go ahead and get started. Tell me about your first job as a veterinary technician or assistant.
Well, my first job was actually at a shelter up in New Hampshire. I had been working at an educational farm for a few months and then got really tired of that and moved over to working in an animal shelter. They called me the veterinary technician, but I had no actual training to be a veterinary technician. So they kind of walked me through things and how to do blood draws. Unfortunately, there was a lot of euthanasia involved in that job. So they actually did send me off to like a little seminar that kind of taught me a lot about euthanasia, which was, as a young person just fresh out of college, that was a kind of a big reality slap. Yeah. To have to go through all that. And then from there, after I left the job at the shelter, I went and worked at a general practice as just a young kid. And the great thing about that place was that I had a lot of older, but more experienced technicians that kind of took me under their wing and kind of showed me the ropes and really did a great job of like teaching me the basics and getting me to where I needed to be a successful technician. So I oftentimes think back to those guys and I'm really grateful for what they did for me. And I try to take that into heart for how I treat new technicians now is that somebody took care of me. So I feel like I owe it back to the veterinary technician world to do the same thing for them. So that's kind of my philosophy as to why I like to be an educator per se for these veterinary technicians that are just starting out.
That's awesome. Yeah, when I had my first job, you know, the doctor taught us a lot, and we had a lot of technicians, or I guess assistants again, that were all like around the same age, that were all just kind of like learning it together. And
right.
It's the same thing, you know, like the doctor kind of took them under their wing and like, you know, trained them. And as I was thinking back now, I don't know that that happens as much today as it used to, but
right.
You mentioned there, you know, when this was like fresh out of college, and I think from a previous conversation, you said you had gone to UMass. Did you go to college like with the idea that this was the kind of career you wanted, or were you in school studying something completely different?
I was on a different career path altogether. So I am a lifelong band geek.
Yes.
Music was my forte. I really wanted to be a musician. I played trumpet. When I was growing up, my mom made my sister and I take piano lessons. And the way that I got into playing the trumpet was that piano lessons were after school. I believe they're on Tuesdays. I don't know why I still remember that. So it was after school. And band was in class. So I got out of class to go be in band, and my options were you can get out of class and go be in band, or you can continue to take piano lessons after school. And that was a no-brainer for me, was getting out of class. So that was my introduction into music. And then as I progressed, as I got through high school, I really enjoyed being in band. And I actually applied and was accepted into Berklee School of Music in Boston. But the sad reality was that UMass was about half the cost of Berklee. So I decided to go to UMass instead. And then I realized that my high school band, there was about 40 students in it. And when I got into UMass, the marching band at UMass, there were 40 students in my section. So there were 40 trumpet players.
Wow.
So I kind of had this very big stark reality of I was a big fish in a little pond, and now I'm at UMass and I'm a very small fish in a very big pond. So music was not going to be my career, because I was pretty good at it, but in comparison to people that I was in classes with, I was light years beyond what they could be able to do. So I decided that I needed a switch. So I dabbled around in pre-vet for a little bit, and wasn't really totally sold on becoming a veterinarian. But from growing up, something that I really loved, when we went to go visit my grandparents every summer, we always would go to the Philadelphia Zoo, and I really loved going to the zoo. I really loved seeing, like, you know, the bears and lions and camels and zebras and mm-hmm. things like that. So I made the decision that I wanted to do something in the animal field, but it wasn't really what I wanted to do was be a veterinarian. So UMass has a program called the Bachelor's Degree with Individual Concentration. So essentially what you can do is you can pick courses from different majors to kind of develop your own major into something that's very specific. And what I wanted to do was work in a zoo. So I took courses from wildlife, I took pre-vet courses, I took biology and zoology, things like that, and kind of created my own major. I believe I called it animal care and maintenance, because what I wanted to do was work in a zoo. And my internship for that was actually working at the Franklin Park Zoo in Boston, which I really loved. I liked working with all the animals, I loved the people, I loved the whole lifestyle. And then they offered me a job my junior year, and essentially I would have had to leave college to take the job, and I said that's not really something that I can do, and quite frankly I think my mother would kill me if I took that job and left college. So I kind of put that on the back burner, and then right out of school I got offered a job at an educational farm up in New Hampshire. And you know, I was a young kid, I was 22, 23 years old, and the guy offered me $18,000 a year, and I said, wow, that's a real lot of money. I don't think I've ever seen that kind of money before. So I took that job, you know, moved from Massachusetts up to New Hampshire, and quickly realized that a salary job was not something that I wanted to do at the time, because, you know, they tell you as a salaried person, some weeks you work 40 hours, some weeks you work 50 hours, some weeks you may work only 30 hours. Well, I don't think I ever worked a week that was less than 60 or 70 hours.
Right.
And I just got exhausted. I was in a bad spot. So I left that job and took the job at the shelter, because it was much more manageable for me at that point.
Okay. What kind of, educational farm? I've never heard that kind of thing. Like, what kind of animals were there? Like, what kind of job tasks did you have?
So essentially, I was a zookeeper at just not on a, I guess if you think about it, zoo animals were a little bit more dangerous than farm animals. So I was essentially being a zookeeper on a farm where I took care of deer. We had, you know, sheep and goats and donkeys. We had a camel. We had a pond that had a lot of birds in it. And there was also they had like horse-drawn trailers that went through the property that they did, like, you know, the Winter Wonderland type deals. They had haunted hay rides, things like that. And basically my job was taking care of the animals. And, you know, at one point the owner of the farm had a partner that took care of most of the things that were in the barn. Like, we had a lot of horses, we had a lot of livestock that were up at the barn itself, and I took care of everything that was kind of in the lower half, which was more the educational things like turkeys and chickens and pigs. So the educational part of it was we had a lot of school groups that would come through, and, you know, I would do like little talks about this is a pig and this is what we use pigs for, and, you know, kind of going over their care and what their role is in the agricultural world. And so I got to do a lot of education at that point about different animals that were on the farm. Essentially, I left because, you know, the work was, I was able to manage it because I was a much younger man than I am now. But it was just too much.
Right.
And obviously the money was not, I think one day I did the math and realized that I was making less than $5 an hour for the number of hours that I was working for my paycheck.
Right.
So it was just something that I couldn't do anymore. I really did love the experience. I loved working with all those animals. But you know, better working conditions, better circumstances, I probably would have stayed at that job.
Yeah. And so you said you kind of transitioned from there to a shelter, and then you transitioned into a general practice. So from general practice into emergency and critical care, like what was the morphology of that? How did that come to be?
So back when I was a young baby tech, I like to call myself a baby tech back then, I was a sponge. I wanted to learn everything I could possibly know. So I worked in a general practice, and about 6 months after I took that job, someone that worked at the local emergency center said, hey, maybe you should come work some weekend shifts there too. You get more information, more knowledge. And so I did that for a little bit, and you know, I think it was right around the time that 9/11 happened, I started to realize that, hey, I'm working like 6 days a week and not spending any time with family or with friends. You know, I was working too much, and I said, maybe I need to back off of that. So I took a little break from emergency medicine. And then about 5 years after that, I kind of took a step back from where I was at in my general practice. And at that point, I'd been working there for about 9 years or so. And I realized that, hey, I haven't really learned a whole lot like in the last couple of years. And, you know, I said, maybe I need to go back to the emergency side of things and see what's going on there. Because I really did enjoy working in emergency, even at that young age. But it became a point of where I didn't want to work that much. And going back to the emergency side of things, I found that I was learning things. I was getting better at the skills that I had already gotten. You know, and then eventually, once I started to realize that emergency was where I needed to be, I kind of made that transition where I was full-time emergency and part-time general practice, where I basically worked on surgery days because, you know, surgery was something that I was really interested in. So I made that switch around 2011 when I was applying for VTS and realizing that once we came to the study phase of things, and you know this, studying on one day off a week was not going to happen. So I needed to make that full-time switch to emergency. And, you know, I never looked back. I always loved working in emergency. Just seeing the things that we don't see in general practice was really intriguing for me.
Right. And so when you were up there, you spent time on the New Hampshire Vet Tech Board doing some of their credential stuff. Like, how did you get into that? Like, how did you find that side of things? Because that's obviously all that stuff is always volunteer, and it can be really rewarding. It can be really challenging. I'm curious about how you found that to be.
Yeah, it was very interesting. You know, that was kind of the first time that I ventured into a part of our field that wasn't really involved with being on the floor or working in an actual practice. So someone that I was working with, Mary, said that, hey, we need a board member. I think a board member left or something like that. And they said, do you want to try it out? And, you know, I sat in on a couple of meetings and I really liked it. I liked the interaction. I really liked the fact that the whole purpose of that board was to bring stuff to veterinary technicians that was going to make them better, you know, and really supporting the veterinary technician field, as opposed to, you know, I didn't realize how much of that was really important for technicians, you know, to make sure that they had their appropriate credentials and making sure that they were given enough CE that they were available to go to. Because, you know, a lot of practices will send you to the big conferences that we go to, but, you know, a lot of there's a lot of other practices that don't have the funds to send people, you know, on flights and hotels and things like that. So there needs to be a lot of local CE that's offered. And I really enjoyed being part of, like, setting that stuff up. And, you know, I gave a few of the talks in the CEs that we offered for the technicians in New Hampshire. And that's really where I kind of got the bug of, like, hey, teaching is something that I really enjoy doing. You know, I like the whole setup of it, of, you know, researching your topic and getting things organized and actually delivering that message to technicians and having them get something out of it was a big thing for me. And my role on the board was the credentials committee. So I would, you know, review their CE certificates, making sure that everything was up to date, you know, and printing out and writing up the certificates for their credentials. So that was kind of my job in that role.
Okay. And so now you find yourself in North Carolina. How did, what drove you to relocate south? Was it the weather, career opportunities? What drove you south?
It was a mix of both. You know, they say New Englanders really are hardy and they enjoy the seasons. And I know that's part of why you came to New England, is you really like the different seasons and the weather. But I had reached my full limit of snow. From a young age, you know, part of my chores as a child was shoveling snow, and I hate being cold, and I really dislike the snow a lot. You know, so after I achieved my VTS, I decided that I was going to stick around for a couple years because, you know, the practice that I was working at, you know, they supported me through that whole process. And, you know, kind of like your situation, where I was the only VTS they'd ever had there, and I wanted to give them the benefit of actually having someone like that on staff to help, you know, bring technicians up to a higher level, and just to have that that status, to be able to promote that they have a VTS on staff. So I stuck around for a little bit, and then eventually, after I want to say it was three or four years, I said, okay, I think I'm done with the snow. And I kind of put a message out to the people that we studied with, and I said, okay, I'm ready to move. Where am I going? And then the practice that I came down to in North Carolina said, hey, we want you to be a supervisor. And I said, oh, a supervisor, that's not really something I've done before. And, you know, they flew me down. They gave me a nice lengthy working interview. I really got to see North Carolina in all its finest, because it was, when I came down here, I came down, I think it was late February, early March. And, you know, up north, it was in the 30s, and down here it was in the 70s. And I said, oh, I could deal with 70 degree weather in February and March. So I took that job. You know, I really do miss all my people up in New Hampshire. I hope they're all listening. But I really do miss those people. I really enjoy everything I gained from them, and I really hope they learned a lot from me. But being down here in the warmer weather has been so much better for me. So yes, career advancement, but part of it was also the weather.
You know, it's funny you say that, because it's for me the opposite, and so many people up here give me a hard time. I think now, at the stage of my life, like, if I was to switch careers, I think I would be a meteorologist. I love all facets of weather, and I do. I love the snow and I love the cold, and people up here are always like, why do you like the cold, you know? And for me, I guess, as you kind of said, it's still a novelty to me. I didn't grow up in it. I didn't have a chore of shoveling snow. And just the other day, I showed up to work, and mind you, it was like 55 degrees that day. It was not cold. There was a nor'easter, but it was just some rain. And, you know, I had long sleeve t-shirt and a sweatshirt and a jacket and a beanie, and I had my bean boots on, and everybody's like, are you ready for the snow or what? And I'm like, hey, I'm a California boy. This is cold to me. I'm going to be warm and cozy, and I'm going to be happy. I don't have anything to prove. I don't need to walk around in shorts and a t-shirt and be miserable. I can be warm and happy. Again.
and so. they deal with the cold weather down here a lot differently. I like to tell the story of my first snowstorm experience here, where the snow was about to come. They, you know, the meteorologists were all up in arms because we were going to get a 3 to 4 inch snowstorm, and 3 to 4 inches up in New England is nothing. That's not even really reportable. Down here, it's a catastrophic event, and they called a snow emergency about 6 hours before the snow actually started falling. And as you know, up in the north, they don't call a snow emergency until the plows have been out for a good 12 to 24 hours and nobody's had a break and they're getting tired, and they say, okay, maybe we need to call an emergency. And then after the snow finally did end up falling, I went outside the next day and I could still see grass on the ground. And I said, this is not something that needs to be an emergency, but they handle things a little bit differently down here. And it's something I'm still getting used to, but it's a lot different than what we deal with up north.
Yeah, for sure. So kind of getting back on track a little bit. So, you know, you had worked at the clinic up in New Hampshire. You got your VTS there. So like, what has, since you've gotten your VTS, like, I know you moved down there and you've worked at other clinics and stuff, but like, what other kind of like career opportunities did that spawn for you? Like, what other directions have you pursued that since?
So the opportunities that having a VTS gives you is, I guess part of the reason that I got my VTS in the first place was, yes, I'm a super nerd and I do like learning things. My wife at the time was pursuing her master's of education and was potentially going to be leaving the area. So in order to find my way into a job anywhere I wanted, I thought having a VTS, having those extra credentials behind my name would give me a leg up on the competition to get a job anywhere I wanted. But, you know, since we've split up, the benefits of having a VTS has been far more than I anticipated, where it puts you kind of on a level where people look to you for to be an expert on the field. Mm-hmm. So, you know, practices that I work at, they look to me for training opportunities. They look at me for, hey, I have a question about this one medication or this one procedure. Do you have any background on that? And you know, the skills list that we go through and the knowledge that we have to gain to get our VTS, all that information is there. And if it's not directly in the front of my brain, I have a vast collection of articles and documentation for pretty much anything that we can go for. So it's giving me the opportunity to be a great educator at any practice that I work at, but it's also giving me the opportunity to have some clout when I'm, you know, submitting lectures to be to speak at IVAX or speak at other conferences. I haven't done a whole lot at the big conferences, but you know, hopefully for next year my lectures will be accepted and I'll get to speak at some of the bigger conferences. But it kind of gives you that leg up of saying that you have those credentials behind your name, that people look to you for to be the voice of authority on certain subjects. And that being said, you know, coming down here, I think that was part of why they looked to me to come down and help out their practice, because I have that experience. And, you know, at the time I had a good 20 years of experience in the field, so that probably played a role into it too. But having a VTS also kind of gave me that extra boost of, you know, they're not going to have to train me, they're not going to have to teach me how to do certain things,
right?
And quite the opposite, that maybe I'll be able to teach them things, as opposed to, you know, they hire somebody new that they don't really know anything about. You know, if they're a CVT or an LVT or an RVT, yes, they have some knowledge, but having that VTS makes them say that, oh, they've gone through that second level of training, that they know what they're doing. So that's kind of helped me out in getting around where I need to go.
Gotcha. Two things I know you've done a little bit since you've done that too. You've been a mentor for that academy, and you're on the credentials committee for Avecton now as well. Yeah. So talk a little bit about that. Talk a little bit about how mentoring, you know, looking at, you know, people that are applying or studying, like talk about a little bit about that, about how, you know, you see them kind of progress.
So the mentoring, I really enjoyed doing that. So basically what you do is you are that mentor, for I guess lack of a better term, where applicants for our VTS, the emergency critical care VTS, they have you as that person to look to say, hey, I'm studying this, can you help me out with this section? Or the other part of it is the case reports and the case logs, having someone that has gone through the process to be able to read through it and say, you know, I think the way that you kind of spelled this out was good. You know, just be able to have someone to actually review those case logs and case reports to make sure that everything's on the up and up. And then just being able to utilize the knowledge that we have. You know, sometimes when we, a problem that I had was, you know, after we got our VTS, is worrying that, you know, we spend that good 6 or 8 months of cramming and studying nonstop, and all that information getting crammed into your brain. You worry that once that all goes away, once you pass the test and you have those credentials, is that going to get lost because you're not studying it constantly, where I found that being a mentor, you have to access that information, even if it's something that you're not using in the clinical practice, you know, day to day, you know, because we go through stretches where there's not those crazy cases where we have to utilize all the knowledge that we have. Being able to actually utilize that in teaching applicants through that has really helped out. I haven't really been a mentor in the last couple of years, but I really enjoy doing that. And then the other part, being on the credentials committee, is you kind of get to go through all that all over again. You get to look at those case reports, and you know, you and I are going to start reading those case reports in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm really drawn to the cases that I get to read about that are really interesting cases. You know, sometimes you get those case reports that are, you know, just a GDV, and you know, you've read a million GDV case reports, and you know, there's not really a whole lot that's different. But reading those case reports that are really interesting, I will say some of the things that are really interesting are the ones that are cases that I haven't seen personally. Things that the last time we read through them, there were some case reports from Australia where, you know, certain snake bites or different toxins that they have in other countries were really intriguing to me, because I would read through those, and then all with the lack of knowledge that I have of that specific case report, it makes me actually look up. So like, what happens with this type of snake bite or this type of medication? So that constantly educating yourself by having to read through all those things has really been helpful for me in my career, because it keeps my knowledge skills up, and it keeps me constantly actively looking for knowledge and constantly learning, which, you know, they say once you pass your VTS, that's not where the learning stops. That's where you get your basis, and then you continue to go from there. So I feel like that has made me constantly learn, constantly grow as a technician.
Gotcha. And so now you're, you know, I know with this past IVEX, you were working on your recover train the trainer. So you've been doing some recover stuff lately. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I love CPR. CPR is one of those things where, you know, from the first time that I was exposed to it, when I was a young baby tech, I was really intrigued by it. And, you know, just the fact that we are that lifeline for them in that situation. And you know, the fact that, I get to now do that and train people, and kind of constantly go through that. I'm actually using that at the school that I'm teaching. We just went through, we didn't teach them, you know, the recover, we didn't go through the recover training per se, but we did some CPR training with the students, and they really loved doing that. I feel like I sparked that like interest in them that I got that first time that I went through CPR stuff. So just being able to do that and kind of going into different practices to give the recover training to people, and you know, it's all about elevating the level of care that we're giving. You know, practices that I've worked in recently, even doctors that I see giving CPR, I'm like, you realize you're not doing that right. And just being able to educate people into doing things the right way, regardless of whether or not it brings them back, because as we know, only 6% of them we really bring back. But to be able to do things the right way and do things the most effective way, I think, is what I'm trying to drive home when I'm giving these trainings. So I'm really excited to get started on, you know, getting out to the other clinics and giving the CPR training for these guys to help bring everyone up to the same level. I feel like that's going to be a big advancement in our profession. The whole recover initiative has been great these last few years.
Oh, for sure. And I hope to have in the not too distant future, like, you know, a guest that will, you know, we'll spend almost the entire time talking about recover. Yeah. It's a really fascinating and emerging discussion topic. Yeah. So I look forward to that. You mentioned, I know you've been at a career crossroads lately, and you mentioned that you are now in the teaching side of things. So I know it's still pretty new for you, but how are you finding that transition? Like, what's different for you? How's that going?
I've really enjoyed it. And then obviously I made, I don't want to say it's a career switch, because I am still in the field. So essentially how it came about was that we had some externs at my practice from one of the local schools, and I got to talking to the program director because she came in to do like evaluations on the students that we had. And I just briefly mentioned, I said, yeah, at some point, as I'm getting older, I'm going to have to take make that decision of, do I want to move into teaching? Because that's essentially what I was doing at the job that I was working at. I was doing a lot of teaching, you know, on the floor. And I said, as I get older and not able to be on the floor anymore, I'm going to have to move into that realm. And she says, yeah, we'd love to have you with all your credentials and, you know, your experience. You'd be a great person to come teach at the school. And so I kind of put that on the back burner. And then actually one of the other technicians that I worked with, she was teaching at the school, and she was teaching what they termed, I believe the class is called Advanced Animal Medical Techniques. So more advanced skills and more in-depth discussions about disease processes. So they termed it the emergency track of the course. So I said, oh, that's kind of something that I would like to teach at some point. And then Sarah, who was teaching that course, her husband got a job. I believe her husband got a job out in Nebraska. So she had to leave and there was an opening. And I said, well, maybe that's something I want to try.
Here we go.
So it kind of happened fairly quickly where, you know, it was, you know, she moved away and the course was available. And I said, well, I'll give it a try and see how I do. You know, and it's been a process of figuring out the right way to do things. You know, editing the lectures and mm-hmm. you know, and my delivery style has changed because, you know, as you know, giving it at a lecture at conferences, you're kind of the authority. But there's that spot in the back of your mind where you're like, somebody out in this audience knows a little bit more than I do. And I just hope they don't call me out on it. Whereas teaching in a school setting, you know that you're the one that knows more than any of them do, and you are the authority on things, so it makes it a little bit easier to give that lecture to students that are not at the level that you're used to teaching to. And then with that, so I taught that course. It was spring into summer, so it ended in, you know, early August. And then at the very end of that session, or I believe they call it modules, at the end of that module, one of the full-time teachers at that school gave her notice. So more opportunity was opening up for me. And then I had like this 2-month debate within myself of, I know I said eventually I want to move into teaching, and I had to make that decision. Do I want to do that right now, or do I want to wait? And, mm-hmm. you know, where I was at with the job that I was working in, you know, I was starting to get really tired and, you know, getting older and not wanting to do stuff on the floor, where I eventually made the decision that, yeah, this is what I want to do, and this is what I want to do right now. I've only gone through 1 week of having to teach full-time courses, you know, and I'm teaching that advanced animal medical technique, so that's my comfort zone where I've already taught the class, and it's a topic that I'm really invested in and I really enjoy teaching about. And then my other two classes are, one is just animal medical techniques, where there's a lot of husbandry classes that we're teaching, so some of it's kind of out of my realm, but I'm making my way through it. I also have Robin, who's a vet, that I have to lean back on and say, hey, can you talk to me about vaccines? Because I haven't really talked about vaccines in the last 10 years or so. So she's helped me, you know, get through some of the material. Nice. And being able to deliver it appropriately and efficiently. So that's helped out a lot. So being a teacher is, it's new. This is the first time, like I said, in the last 20 years, where going to work did not involve me going and working on animals and, you know, seeing emerging cases and seeing triages and things like that. So it's been different, but I've really enjoyed it so far. You know, I'm only a week or so into classes, so I'm not fully invested on exactly everything it's going to entail, but I'm excited to move forward and kind of bring up these technicians that are coming up through the schools. And, you know, it kind of goes back to, you know, when we first started talking about those technicians at the general practice that I first worked at, of them kind of taking me under their wing and, you know, showing me everything that they knew and mm-hmm. giving me all the information that I need to become the technician that I am today. And that kind of really sits in the front of my brain about, that's what I need to do for these guys is, you know, somebody took me under their wing. They didn't have to, and they did. I feel like I owe that back to the technician community to do that, and I really enjoyed doing that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I totally get it. I think we'll end with one more question. So
sure.
Why the podcast? Like, what made you want to do this? What do you hope to do with Vet Tech Cafe? What do you want to get out of Vet Tech Cafe? Like, why?
So So you and I had that discussion that night at IVEX about, I don't remember exactly how it started, but
which may have been over more than one beer. That's
entirely possible. But we got to that discussion of like, you know, I'm a big podcast listener. I listen to a lot of podcasts. And I think the year before you got into the study group, we listened to a podcast that was more of a human emergency medicine podcast. We learned a lot from that. And
was that Burn Doc?
Burn Doc, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, really, I love that.
And, you know, I've been big into podcasts for the last couple years. And I just love the delivery style. And I love the opportunity of being able to give back to the community to a broader listening audience than, you know, just in the clinic or just in the school setting. But you and I are going through that crossroads periods of is this what we want to do? And, you know, a couple years ago, thinking of that of, you know, as I got older, thinking, am I going to be able to do this till I'm 50? And the answer always came back, no. And then the question came up, what am I going to do? And just the fact that, you know, as we go to IVEX and we go to all these lectures and we see the people that we know that we've networked that are doing all these different things, and, you know, the people that are doing education, people that are doing working in on boards and working on committees and working in different areas of the field that I think at one point in our lives was not really apparent to us. And now those things are kind of coming to light the more that we get involved in talking to other people. And I feel like there's other people out there that are like us, that maybe they don't know what to do. And hopefully that this podcast is going to give them some kind of insight into, oh, there are other things to do. I don't have to leave the field. Because, you know, I've gone through times where I was like, maybe I just need to get a plain old boring 9-to-5 job doing sales or doing something that's not veterinary medicine. But then I think back and say, you know, I've put 22 years into this field. I've put a lot of time, effort, money, a lot of dedication into this field. I can't abandon it. You know, and there's got to be people out there that are at the same spot. And this podcast, I hope, is going to give people an opportunity to see other avenues for their careers, whether it be moving into a speaking career, whether it's going for a VTS in emergency critical care or IM or oncology, or you know, I think there's what, 17 available academies now, and hopefully we'll get to talk to people from all those academies to kind of give people just a glimpse, a look into, this is what you can do. You don't have to work in a clinic setting the rest of your life, and you know, there's going to be people that's what they want to do. I know people that have worked in a clinic for a really long period of time. There's a technician that I worked with at my first general practice, and she'd worked there for, I think she was there for a good 20 years before I got there, and we're a good 20 years later. I think she might still be there. Judy, send me a message if you're still there. and, you know, there's people that want to do that for the rest of their lives. But there's also people, as you know, there's a lot of turnover in our field. That if we can save some technicians from leaving the field to go do something else, by giving them another avenue, another opportunity to think about or to work on, I feel like that's really beneficial for the field. So, you know, it's all about giving back to the vet tech community, or vet nurse community, however you want to term yourselves, to figure out, you know, how can we make our profession better, and how can we make our field better, and how can we keep our technicians in the field?
Absolutely. I totally agree. That's awesome. Well, I definitely want to thank you very much for your time, and thanks for chatting. And I, just like you said, you know, I definitely learned a lot about you through this interview. that was really cool. A lot of stuff I didn't know in there. So thanks for being here today, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again.
It was my pleasure, Jeff.
Thank you, everybody, for your continued support. And if you haven't already, please find us on Facebook at Vet Tech Cafe, or on Instagram and Twitter at Vet Tech Cafe, or send us an email at vettechcafe@gmail.com. We really appreciate your support. Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast by Jeff Backus and Dave Cowan. The opinions expressed herein are solely those of both Jeff and Dave and our interviewed guest as well, and do not reflect the opinions or values or priorities of any of the companies that may be mentioned therein. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you have a great day at the Vet Tech Cafe.